Thankful to be with everyone this morning. We're going to be looking at these three hands. I want you to look at these hands and decide which one of them is yours. I don't know if you've noticed or not, but I guess most of my life I've seen it, but it seems to be becoming more and more of a common thing, is a three-generational decline spiritually. It seems like there is one generation may be one thing, and the next generation will go to another, and by the third generation, it's completely different than what it once was. When we look at spiritual things, as we're going to be this morning, I want us to look and see where we fit in. What generation are we? The first generation, second generation, or third generation? When I say first generation, I'm referring to those who have a great zeal for serving God. They're enthusiastic, they're fired up, and if there's something that needs to be done, they're the ones that jump on it, and they do it. But then you've got the second generation, who they go to worship, but their worship is more of an appearance than it is a true worship, where there's no zeal, they're basically going through the motions, but they're at least there. And then we look at the third generation, and that generation is the one that really doesn't care much anymore, not even enough to go to worship. And I want us to look at this. I want us to examine ourselves and see where we honestly fit into there. I would say since we're here, I doubt many of us are in the third generation. But maybe we're in the second generation, and we are here, but there's no zeal to it. There's no fire in us to go do the work of the Lord. Hopefully we're all in the first generation. But as we look at ourselves, we can fluctuate from one generation to the next. Again, we're going to look at here as we begin, we're going to be looking at families in the Bible. Again, with Abraham, and we're going to start with that here in just a second, if you want to go ahead and turn over to Genesis. But as we look at that, we're going to see how there was a quick and sharp decline in the family. Now, just because you're the first generation physically, you're the grandparent, doesn't mean that you are the first generation spiritually. We can fluctuate between one or the other, or all three even. I've seen people go from a one, or seemingly a one, all the way to a three, where they just don't care anymore. But we've got to look at ourselves and see where we fit in, but not just us. I want us to consider our friends, our family, and those around us. Where do they fit into this? And at the end of it, what is our responsibility to ourselves? And what is our responsibility to other people as well? And so that's what I want us to consider this morning, this idea of three generations. As I said, as we look at Abraham, Isaac, and we're going to go the way of Esau this morning. When you begin looking at Abraham, and I've tried to do it, if they're parentheses, we're not going to read them. We're going to try to read most of them that aren't in parentheses. So if you want to go ahead and turn over to chapter 26, we'll read that here in just a second, I think. If not, we'll be at 25. But as you go through this and you look at Abraham, again, we've read in the adult Bible study that he was a friend of God. Many call him the father of faith. And we'll look in Hebrews 11 again this morning as we have in Bible class. But you see that he was a godly-minded person. He had his mistakes, no doubt. But in Genesis chapter 12, 13, and 22, we see that pretty much everywhere he went, he built an altar. That was what his mind was set on, was I'm going to serve God. I'm going to make an offering to Him and a sacrifice. So we see that in his life. Now, as you look over to Isaac, you see that he was not as interested in building altars. He was more interested in wells. That's what he was known for. There in chapter 26 and verse 25, we see that the one time that he actually built an altar, there at the end of verse 25, and there Isaac's servants dug a well. So even though there was an altar there, yeah, I'm going to throw a well by it too. And so that's a big thing with Isaac, his wells. It wasn't focused on the altar aspect of it, but again, he worshiped God in some form. But as you go to the third generation, and you see Esau, we see that it changes even more than it did with Isaac. Now, I will say, in chapter 25, beginning in verse 28, we read that, "And Isaac loved Esau because he ate of his game, but Rebekah loved Jacob." Why did he love Esau? It was a physical aspect that made him love Esau. Again, he's concerned with physical wells. He loves his son because of the physical things that he has to bring to it. But as you continue in there looking at Esau, the decline continues on. He marries local women. He didn't worship God. Verse 29 of chapter 25 says, "Now Jacob cooked a stew, and Esau came in from the field, and he was weary. And Esau said to Jacob, 'Please feed me with that same red stew, for I am weary.' Therefore, his name was called Edom. But Jacob said, 'Sell me your birthright as of this day.' And Esau said, 'Look, I'm about to die.'" And again, we know this story on there. There at the end of verse 34, "Thus Esau despised his birthright." Most of the time when we talk about birthright, we're talking about inheritance and things. But that's not it. Their birthright was who they are. Their birthright was also where they came from. It was a whole lot more than just, "Give me the inheritance." Your name and who you were is part of that. Your identity was partially in that inheritance, in that birthright. And so it just kind of shows, you know, I'm not as concerned about who I am and who my family is and my past and all. I'm not concerned about that. I'm just worried about right now I'm hungry. And so there's some spiritual stuff that goes along with that, I believe. And so you just kind of see what's going on here. But my point is, from these three generations, 1, 2, and 3, we go from very godly, makes mistakes, but godly, willing to drop everything and move from Ur and be obedient to God. When he says go, let's go. All the way to, I really don't care about that anymore. And so that's such a sharp thing. It's kind of surprising and scary how fast it can come. But that's what happened to them. And if it happened to them, it can happen to us as well. Another example I want to look at is with David's family. Again, David, like Abraham, he had his weaknesses. He had his faults. But at the end of the day, he was also the one who was a man after God's own heart. And so we see what kind of character he was. That's a generation one kind of person. He made mistakes, but when he made a mistake, he said, "How can I fix it? How can I move back to be who you want me to be?" As we studied the other day, yes, he had to suffer for his decisions, his early decisions for the rest of his life there. But we see that him being a successful father was not one of his great successes in life. He had some problems. Looking at some of his children, Amon raped his half-sister. Another son, Absalom, he tried to overthrow David. Remember, he went and slept with some of his father's concubines out in public. Look over at 1 Kings chapter 1, we see Adonijah. And he also tried to overturn his father. But notice here in 1 Kings 1, part of the reason giving for him having this attitude. 1 Kings chapter 1, beginning verse 5, says, "Then Adonijah the son of Haggith exalted himself, saying, 'I will be king.' And he prepared for himself chariots and horsemen and 50 men to run before them. And his father had not rebuked him at any time by saying, 'Why have you done this?' He was also very good looking. His mother had borne him after Absalom." So we see part of the reason, I believe, that why he did this is, as it says there in parentheses in verse 6, his father had not rebuked him at any time. His father did not seem to be one that was able to control him and make him, you know, "This is not right. I'm going to call you on that because of that." And so we see that they followed their own paths. They want to overturn daddy because they wanted what they wanted. And I'm going to get what I want. And I'll do whatever I need to do it. Family aside, I'm going to do it. And so, again, a huge difference from one generation to the next and to the third generation. But then you can see this also with Israel. Israel as a whole. Before I do that, let me finish out Solomon. I don't want to forget one of the important sons. Solomon. 1 Kings chapter 11. Solomon was better than his other brothers were. But he still had his problems as well. He had his weaknesses. Again, his wives and his wealth became part of his downfall. What he put his trust in instead of trusting in God. There in 1 Kings chapter 11, beginning in verse 1. "But King Solomon loved many foreign women, as well as the daughter of Pharaoh, women of the Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Sidonians, the Hittites, from the nations of whom the Lord had said to the children of Israel, you shall not intermarry with them, nor they with you. Surely they will turn away your hearts after their gods. Solomon clung to these in love, and he had several hundred wives, princesses, and 300 concubines, and his wives turned away his heart. For so it was, when Solomon was old, that his wives turned his heart after other gods, and his heart was not loyal to the Lord his God, as was the heart of his father David. So Solomon went after Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and after Milcom, the abomination of the Ammonites. Solomon did evil in the sight of the Lord, and did not fully follow the Lord, as did his father David. So two times there, verse 6 and also in verse 4, talking about he did not follow the first generation, but he became the second generation. He stepped down from where his father had been. And so that's kind of who he is. But as you continue on, you see things in his life. There in 1 Kings 6, you see that it took him seven years to build the temple for God. But then in chapter 7, you see it took 13 years to build his own palace. And so it kind of, well, you spent twice as much time on your own stuff as you did with God's. Kind of gives you a pointer about where his attention was and where he wanted to put his priority. But then you see his son, Rehoboam. You get to that third generation and you see what he did. Again, Jeroboam, he split the kingdom. We see that Judah turned after idols under his rule. In 1 Kings chapter 14, you can see some of what is described there. Again, verse 22 says, now Judah did evil in the sight of the Lord, and they provoked him to jealousy with their sins which they committed, more than all their fathers had done. For they also built for themselves high places, sacred pillars, and wooden images on every high hill and under every green tree. And there were also perverted persons in the land. They did according to all their abomination of the nations which the Lord had cast out before the children of Israel. Again, you see the direction that they're pointing, the way that they're going down. It's no surprise that they end up going to this extent. Going from one who was one after God's own heart, who loved God and tried to make every correction possible, to, I don't care anymore. I'm just going to do what makes me happy. And that's exactly what we see them doing here. The whole attitude that David had instilled or tried to instill was gone. Now let's look at Israel. Again, just very quickly, you think about Israel during the time of Joshua. While Joshua was reigning, things were good. They turned and they worshiped God. But then as we went down by the third generation, they had forgotten who God was completely. There in Judges chapter 2, beginning in verse 7, we read about this decline through the generation. Verse 7, it says, so the people served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders who outlived Joshua, who had seen all the great works of the Lord which he had done for Israel. Now Joshua, the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died when he was 110 years old. And they buried him within the border of his inheritance at Timnah-Heres in the mountains of Ephraim on the north side of Mount Gaash. When all the generations had been gathered to their fathers, another generation arose after them who did not know the Lord nor the work which he had done for Israel. Then the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals. And they forsook the Lord God of their fathers who had brought them out of the land of Egypt, and they followed other gods from among the gods of the people who were all around them. And they bowed down to them, and they provoked the Lord to anger. Again, just as we saw with Abraham's family, as we saw with David's family, there is a quick decline here. Whatever reason it is, someone who's not standing fast, they turn to their own ways. Again, we can see that today. We can see it in our families. I would dare to say that everyone in here is involved with someone in their family has followed this exact path. It's a painful thing to experience. It's a painful thing to view. But it's something that we can't just act like it's not there. It's something that we need to try to do to make sure that if it's not happened, that it doesn't happen. But if it has happened, what can we do to make it right? But it does make you question, how did this happen in the first place? How can a first generation strong Christian raise a second generation not so strong Christian? And again, a lot of it goes back to their choice. I've known several Christians who have done their best to raise their children, and they do everything that seems right, but then the child makes the choice. We're not just talking about children here, but other people. And you sit there and go, what did I do wrong? How could this have happened? It's a lot of it has to do with choice. But I'm going to look at a few things that may be different. Time is viewed different. You know, you look at the first generation type of people. They do a lot of dwelling in today. And that kind of sounds like a bad thing, but in this aspect, it's a good thing. They think about, what do I need to do? In Luke chapter 10, in verse 2, remember what Jesus said there? He said, the harvest truly is great, but the laborers are few. Therefore, pray the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest. These are the same ones we see in Isaiah chapter 6 and verse 8. Remember when the Lord asked Isaiah this, whom shall I send and who will go for us? Remember what Isaiah said to him? He said, here am I, send me. That's the first generation type of thinking. This way of viewing time. This is the time I have. This is the day the Lord has made. And this is what I'm going to use it for. I'm going to rejoice, as that passage says. I'm going to get to work. It's not, I'm looking for other laborers to labor, but I'm the laborer who can labor. And you see yourself in that position of doing the work. That's the first generation type of mindset. But then you look at the second generation type of mindset. They dwell more in the past. And you hear them say things like, well, when I was younger, we did this. Or this is what I used to do. Or this is the way that we used to do it. And they focus on those kinds of things. You know, you think about what Paul said. He didn't focus on what's now, what I've already attained. I would think about, I'm pressing forward. I'm looking to what I can do. I'm not laying back and using that as a crutch. But you see that kind of attitude. You look at the Jews back in that time, in the New Testament time. So many times, go and turn over John chapter 8. You see them, Jesus is trying to tell them, this is what you need to do, and this is how the truth affects you, and the truth can make you free. Notice what they said there when Jesus said that in John chapter 8. They said, we are Abraham's descendants and have never been in bondage to anyone. How can you say it will make me free? They weren't worried about what happened. Yes, I'm related to Abraham, but only when it's convenient. I'm not a slave. Look who I am. They don't see the big picture about what Jesus was trying to say to them. Down in verse 39, he continues there. Abraham is our father, is another response they made, just like they did back in 33. And Jesus said to him, if you were Abraham's children, you would do the works of Abraham. But now you seek to kill me, a man who has told you the truth, which I heard from God. Abraham did not do this. Again, they tried to access Abraham whenever it was convenient for them, but otherwise they were just focused on me. This truth has nothing to do with me. I'm not a slave. I can't see that. Abraham is only there just as a backup for me. They didn't understand everything that he had done to get them to this point. It's a very selfish mindset. That was a second generation kind of thing. Another reason why this decline, generational decline, may happen is because of the way that authority is viewed. Again, you look back on how people viewed things. When God said, you leave Ur of the Chaldees, you go over here to this place, I'm not even going to tell you about it. Abraham didn't question him. He said, you told me to go, and I'm going. He didn't have to use his words to do that either. He did it with his actions. And so that's the kind of thing. When God says, I do, no questions asked, this is what's going on there. If someone wants to find some spiritual information, they go to the scriptures. They don't go to people to try to say, what's your opinion on that? And so that's the first generation. The second generation, though, you ask them, what does the Bible say? And their response is, well, I think, not God says. And you see that kind of transition of, wait, I don't really care what you think. What does the Bible have to say about it? But that's the first way that they go to it. Not to say that we can't ever say, this is what I think, this is my interpretation of it. But God's idea does not have anything to do with some of the things that are said. In Matthew chapter 15, you can see how this is described by Jesus there in verse 8, where he says, these people draw near to me with their mouth, and they honor me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. And in vain they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men. Again, these are the people, like I said before, in the second generation. They go to worship, but their heart isn't in it. As you think about 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 5, as Paul talks to Timothy, he describes these kind of people as having a form of godliness, yet denying its power. And he goes on to say, from these people, turn away. Turn away from this kind of people. They are not genuine in their love and their zeal for God. In verse 7, he continues, he says, they're always learning and they're never able to come to the knowledge of the truth. Have you ever known Christians like that? It's like they study, but they can't ever grow in anything because they're not trying to learn. Many times it's trying to prove yourself. Again, and I say they and they. I've been in probably all three of these generations at one point in my life or another. I can say they, but really I'm saying me. And I hope that's what everybody is saying as we go through the, where do I honestly fit into this? Am I here just because I am supposed to be here? Or am I worshiping? Have I completely left everything because I want to serve myself? Been there, done that. Or am I strong, zealous, doing the work? We've got to look at this. And how do we view authority? How do we view our time? That's what we're supposed to be thinking about this morning. As you look at Romans chapter 10, we can see another explanation that Paul gives of this. Again, having zeal, but not the right kind of zeal. He begins in verse 1 of Romans chapter 10. Brethren, my heart's desire and prayer to God for Israel is that you may be saved. For I bear witness that they have a zeal for God, but not according to knowledge. For they, being ignorant of God's righteousness and seeking to establish their own righteousness, have not submitted to the righteousness of God. Again, the worship looks good, but deep down, there's no substance to it. Deep down, they doubt God. They deny the power of the gospel and what it really can do. And they deny the authority that is there because they're trying to put their own self forward. Again, these are the ones that say things like, it's not going to work. Or you can't get people to study like they used to. Or you know what, the Bible needs to be updated. It needs to reflect our modern society and not just stick with what it says. You know, it's out of date. It needs to change. Not I need to change, but the Bible does. But again, until there's a good grasp of God's authority and where that fits in, they're never going to buy into the true worship to God. And one more reason that I want to give, I'm sure there's many, many others, but just thinking about some ideas of how this could happen, is just, in general, a different focus on life. Remember in Hebrews chapter